This is Karen Musgrave, and I am doing a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Sylvain Bergeon. Mm-hmm. It is now 9:43 in the morning on March 1st, 2008, and I want to really thank you for taking your time to do this interview with me. So please tell me about the quilt that you brought today for the interview.
Okay. The quilt was actually an application of an idea that came through embroidery, machine embroidery. I've been teaching embroidery design software classes for 9 years, and I've been telling my students, some of whom were quilters, that they could add embroidery to a quilt as a design element, whether it's on a border, on the sashing, or in the main blocks. And I came up with thread doodles, that I call them. They're little patches of 4x4 inches that you could use if you didn't find the print of fabric that you wanted. You could lay thread tracks on it, get the colors with the added benefit of texture, because thread does add texture in addition to just color. And I made about 14 of those that I taught on in a class, how to make them and how you could apply them. And one of the blocks I really liked, and I told my students, I will play with it some more. And so I evolved from, you can add embroidery to the quilt, to the question, what if embroidery is the quilt? And I had not seen anything like that done. I just wanted to see it on fabric. So I went along, spent 200 and some hours, and made the first quilt. And when I saw the quilt, I said, okay, this works. But I was not aware that this has not been done really before. So I was encouraged to pursue the idea and enter it in Houston. The way it works is each block, this is a series I've done. There's 5 pieces. There will be a 6th piece when I'm done. This piece we're talking about today is Tied in Knots. It was at the International Quilt Festival in Houston in the fall of 2006, rather. And that won the Master Award for Thread Artistry, which was the first year that award was created, sponsored by Superior Threads. And the way it works is that each block, 4x4, is embroidered separately, and then it is pieced in a very conventional, basic square sashing. And I just use what I call the window frame binding to give a little more substance to the binding, because these are really wall tableaus. They're not really derived from the traditional quilt making process, if you want. I did not grow up, my mother quilted some, but she mostly made garments and projects for the house. So although there was sewing in the house, quilting was not really of the essence. And I'm realizing a lot of men come through quilting without that historical background. We learn about it along the way, which is awesome. You know, it's interesting. But we don't come through the tradition. So we don't know we're supposed or not supposed to do it a certain way. So I just applied this, and the way these blocks work, the embroidery works, it's not just self-enclosed little blocks. Really, each one connects to the next. And so the design is meant to flow. And I use four layers of color. And the joke in Houston is that no drugs were required in the formulation of the pattern, and no drugs are required for the viewing of the pattern. So I have a funny story, actually, in Houston, because if you stand away from these quilts, this series, the layers of color separate as you get up to about 10, 15 feet away from the quilt. And if you move in a hemisphere, you know, in a semicircle in front of the quilt, the twist of the thread and the arcs in the design of the quilt make the, for instance, the yellow motif, the main motif here, will twist. So the quilt appears to be shifting, depending on the angle of view and the amount of light shed on the quilt.
Did you know that was going to happen when you designed it?
No. The first one I did were pure circles. So 4 circles offset from each other, yellow on top, red immediately underneath, and then blue and then green. And as you walk about 10, 15 feet from the quilt, if you look over your shoulder sideways and just keep walking by, the circles thin, because they look like the back of a CD. And that was the one that, you know, that was when the joke about the drugs came up. Like, you know, no, you don't need to take anything, and they will spin. So from that one, I evolved, I opened up the design. It was funny. I came with no quilting background, basically. This is my second art quilt. I had made my first and only traditional quilt. It's made from old blue shirts that I slashed in 5-inch squares and then made a bed quilt to keep my son warm at night. And it's called Old Blues. And when I made that first quilt, I was out of a man's large size shirt. You can get 19 5-inch squares. There's no worn spots. I can get it reliably. Well, I was short of 6 blocks to finish the grid, so I went to the closet and I said, "You're the right blue color." Pulled the last shirt, slashed it up, and made a quilt. That's the only traditional quilt I've made, and it was done in the traditional fashion to keep a child warm at night. From there, I went into the embroidery and posed the question. And then I needed to prove it to myself. Because the joke in Houston was, I'm a guy, I had to prove it. So I put it out, and then when people saw this, I worked for a sewing machine company, they sponsor an award in Houston, so they're in touch with quilting and all that, and one of the VPs told me, "You need to enter this in Houston." I was like, fine. I did not know, I knew of Houston, but it's like you run a 1500 meter in your neighborhood, and somebody says, "Well, you need to apply for the Olympics." And I was kind of doubtful. Well, they surprised me, the fact that there was so much interest in something like this. What I realized is that it opened up a new design sphere, if you want, space in quilting. And I don't say that, with any bragging intended. It's just that embroidery is just a visual, it's like if I had drawn it. And the fact that the thread is not only, if you did the same thing with a print, it would not work. It would be flat. But because it's thread, each strand can catch the light and return it. And I told people in Houston, use your flash. The more light you throw at one of these, the more color you get back. So the whole point of this was a demonstration exercise. And the rest is, I was lucky that, the concept and the award were available to match at the same time. But it was just a demonstration piece. I have done a larger piece of this series. That was in Houston, it was in 07, and they get very heavy. So I found that the middle size is more manageable because the thread is actually heavy. So it's color and line, which is what I like. And actually, as I said in Houston, the key influences on that really got my mind to enter the quilting sphere was before making any quilt, but my artistic mind invested part of its attention into quilting is when I saw Carol Bry Fowler's work. When I saw the Solar Corona, I stopped breathing for a few seconds. I was taken. And then when I saw Libby Lehman's thread play, she, as I said in Houston, she put the two magic words together, thread and play. There's 3 miles of thread on this piece, and it's 68 inches by 45, more or less. The one I did for Houston this year was, 7 miles of thread. And I have one in Tokyo right now that's 5 miles of thread. It uses a lot of thread because that's the entire color palette. The only fabric I use for this series is the navy. There's only one fabric used for the background and the sashing and the biking and everything.
Is it cotton?
It's a solid cotton. Everything, the whole color is thread. That's what people don't realize when they first see the piece. They say, how did you get the color? And when I say it's all thread, it either takes a second question or a closer look and where they can see, oh, wow, it's all thread. So, and the third influence was John Flynn. His piecing is maniacally precise and very geometric. I like abstract geometrics and lines and colors. So these things kind of bubble. I'm a slow cooker. These things bubbled in my head for 2 or 3 years, and then pow, it happened. I made the first one. I was told, "You gotta, keep up with this." And so I just made it to see it, and lucky for me, it worked. And I enjoyed doing this. And then for Tokyo, the thing is for Tokyo, knowing that there was an exhibition, it just began the 9th Quilt Nihon. I made a piece to submit to enter the contest, and knowing the precision the Japanese are known for. I went in Zen mode. I systematically forced my machine to have speed. So I would take my time, and lucky for me, it worked. I took the time. I enjoyed it. I'm pretty high speed by nature. And sewing is one of the few places where I can enter the zone and slow down to a half speed and actually enjoy it. And it took me a little while to learn that. But it slows me down, and I'm in this, it's almost like a suspended, time is suspended, you enter the zone, you're in Zen. And so the one for Japan, actually, I literally applied that as a principle and said, it's the journey this time. And the basic block was already created, I just had to execute it. And that one is my best workmanship so far. So, I was happy to see that, where knowing who you're making it for influences how you're making it. And that, to me, I grew up in a family where my father and my mother were both craftspeople. My father could make anything out of wood. He could build a house, you know, from foundation to chimney cap. My mother could take an adult jacket and make a child's winter coat, you know, out of it. And always, you know, measure twice, cut once. It applied in woodworking and in sewing. So I had very good examples that way. And I find it easier to apply them now that I'm in my mid-40s than when I was in my teens or 20s, you know, and taking the time. And I am trying to, you know, now show my son how. If you take, actually, the one for Tokyo, part of it was a teaching moment for my son. I mean, I enjoyed doing it, the whole process. But my son's 13, and I was telling him, we're trying to get him to apply himself more at school and, you know, get the best results he can. And for a 13-year-old, that can take a little convincing. So I was telling him, if you have an idea and you're willing to work at it, not 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration, you might be going halfway around the world and watch people looking at your idea. And it's not about, you know, the pride of doing that. It's just if you have an idea and you're willing to work at it, you can give it to people and let it go. It will travel. And I've seen other people's quilts. It sparked something in me. And if one day somebody comes back and tells me, you know, they saw my quilt and they decided to try something because of it, that would make, I'm a teacher at heart, that will make me happy. The quilt, it's made. You know, I'm on to the next thing. You know, I enjoy it, I like it, but I don't have enough walls in my house to put all the quilts up. That was another purpose. It was really to see it, you know, to see a picture made. So it was a lot of fun. And I've been lucky. You know, it's having the right idea at the right time. Mm-hmm. It, you know, and I've noticed since that you enter a judge contest, for instance, and the same piece, this one, won a major award in Houston, and in another show, nothing. Because the judges favored a different slant, maybe more traditional, or you know, more of this, more of that, or less of this. So, and I find that because it's new, it's a new technique. It's not necessarily understood the first time. So you know, that's fine. If I have to sell the idea that embroidery can be the quilt, if you go back 15, 20 years ago, completely machine-made quilts, including the quilt stitches. Harriet Hargrave, who was a pioneer, she had to fight. She had to push the idea, and you know, thanks to her, now some of the best work in the world is all machine made. Some of the best work in the world is still handmade. I bow to the, you know, people who have the patience to make a whole complex quilt by hand. I don't have the time. I don't have the patience. So I bow to their, they have something there. Mm-hmm. But there's beautiful work, you know. Carol Briefeli does all the work by machine, and when I look at that, I go, wow, I hope I can do half as well one day, you know. So it's great to see, to me, how the world of quilting, I've been following it for 11 years now, more, since I've been working for a sewing machine company, and to see how it's evolved, it's exploding. It's like, you know, to me it's like a supernova of color, shape, technique, and like, there is no limit to where we're going with this. And, it's great because it opened the door for me. The fact that it's opened up so much. You see that, you know, you see all the art quilt shows now. And I did get questions in Houston on this, actually. Well, that's not a quilt. You know, you can put this on a bed. He said, no, it's too heavy. You know, it is too heavy. The one I made this year weighed like 16 pounds. I found out when I shipped it, you know, to the quilt show. You have to weigh it to charge you the shipping. And no, they're not. And if you put this, you know, I thought at first of putting the circles, the one that spin on my bed. That was the original idea. And then I realized I would have to install a railing in my bedroom because once you walk in, you start the quilt on the bed, you would get dizzy. The room would be spinning in front of you, so that won't work. So the quilt is now on my wall above my bed. And, you know, it's perfect there. And it's also smaller. Sanity prevailed there. But anyway, it's open. The fact that the quilting world is literally exploding with this, you know, this thrust of creative energy. And even the old traditional designs, you know, the grandmother, you know, the drunken path and all that, log cabin, they're being spun in so many ways. It's awesome. You know, you look at that, and if you look at one square inch of that quilt, I can do something with this. And you never know when an idea will spin full circle and come back. When I taught those doodles in the class, there was a cruise that was organized by a lady who did embroidery software classes. And I showed the students, now you can teach on a cruise ship. You know, the backdrop is beautiful. So I'm teaching this, we're talking about how you do this, how you do that. We're having fun. It's like being in the kitchen and you're showing one of your friends how you don't follow the recipe and you do something different, you know. And so they're all right, let's try this. So we're talking and I held up the one block and I said, well, I like this one. I want to play with it some more. Well, one at the award ceremony in Houston, the first one to walk up to me after we're done and they say, you go stand by your quilt to answer questions. Mm-hmm. She walks up to me and she says, remember me? She was in that class when I held up the block and I said, I will play with this one some more. It's like the world just big whoosh. I felt this big whooshing, you know, of 3 years coming to a point. And I hugged her. I was like, wow. You know, the world, it's a small place in time and space. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to teach my son. Because he's very creative. And he's at the age where, you know, 13-year-old are lanky, and they're not comfortable in their body because it's changing too fast for them. And it's at the age where I remember that age, I did not believe I had any artistic sense. Although I made candles, I made baked bread, I did a whole bunch of stuff, I did not accept the fact that I had artistic abilities. And I would like to see schools make children play, no end result in mind. Not you have to make a costume or you have to make this or a painting. Here's a bunch of stuff. Whack it up. Make something out of it. You know, whatever. It's small, big, I don't care. It means something or not, I don't care. Just play with it, you know. And it came later, you know, because we get busy. We have children. We have families. Quilting for me is very seasonal. I do not quilt in the winter. When the light goes down, my energy goes down. I teach evening classes on top of my daytime job, and I'm a single parent half the time. So people say, where do you find the free time? I say, time is not free. You got to buy it. There's a price. So I don't have TV. 27 years, no TV. And people say, what do you do? I say, I recover that time. I don't quilt every night. I don't quilt every week. I don't quilt every month. I am a slow cooker. And then this idea will form in my mind, and then when the spark hits, I will go and, you know, take a week off from work to finish a quilt for Houston, for instance, this year. So I will get at it, and then it's fever pitch. And so it's balancing the fever with the zen. So that's been the tricky point. So my sewing machine is like a artistic sweatshop. When I go into because I do it in concentrated period, I'll get up at 5 in the morning, run embroidery block until 7:30 when I leave for work, you know, while mixing for breakfast, shower and everything, you know, run the machine and come back. And then when I come home at night, I'll be up until 11:30. We'll do that for about a month to get a piece done, and then I'm tired, I'll take a little break. So, and in the summer, I'm more outside and so on, but that's when I capture ideas. So right now my ratio is about for one quilt I make, I have about 10 ideas described in a Word document, in a word processor document, that are waiting. And I do hope, so the joke is now official, I cannot afford to die. I have too many projects. That used to be an abstract idea, you know, when people would say that, I didn't relate to it. Now I do. So it's been, I don't come from the quilting world. And quilting though, because it allowed me to make a tableau, and their square fashion is perfect for that, for this series especially. I'm an innovator. I've always known that, but I don't follow the recipe. I will read enough recipes to know what herbs go with a certain type, with chicken, with pork, and then after that, it's like, okay, let's do what feels right now. And usually it works after you've cooked long enough and all that. But with quilting, luckily there's enough people who know, and I teach at a local quilt shop. Lucky for me, if I have any question on any technique, and I cannot encourage people enough to go to the local quilt shop and keep your quilt shop alive. Make it a point to buy something from there once in a while, because that way the experts will be there available. Because you go to the big chain fabric and craft stores, and oftentimes the person who's cutting the fabric does not sew. Or they try to hire people to sew, but they don't necessarily sew. The local quilt shop, they will be able to help you. So when it came to the basic technique, I was able to get my questions answered and demonstrations and so on. So it's kind of the two worlds that came together. And it, lucky for me, it worked. So I will keep on making them.
So tell me, how did you come to quilt making?
Well, I came from the embroidery. And I taught a lot of people who were quilters.
I know, but how did you come to the embroidery? How did you get on this path?
I came to the embroidery through my current job. I'm actually the webmaster for a sewing machine company.
You could say Bernina.
Yeah, okay, I work for Bernina. I went to ag school. People go, how do you get from ag school? I studied the potato Irish famine disease, the plant, potato late blight. And I was a grad student at Cornell, and I realized that the world of research was too repetitive, too drone-ish for me. I wanted to work with people. So I went to teach computer workshops at Cornell. And from there what happened is that I was teaching people to build websites. The joke was that when Al Gore invented the internet, I was there. I was teaching people how to build websites before they were web design software. There was no front page. There was none of this. You know, no Dreamweaver, nothing. We used Notepad and copy-paste everything. But I sewed as a hobby. I learned to sew right when I finished college, actually. And my philosophy is you jump in the deep end. You don't wait for people to fill the pool. You just go. And you learn a lot that way. And so I came from a garment and a home deck and making a wood carrier for the wood stove and, you know, give me something to mend. I love mending because it's a mental gymnastics. It's a fun game where how do you build a bridge over a running river type of thing. You've never done it before, and you got to get across. So that's a lot of fun. To me, that's a lot of fun because it engages your faculties. It's a very positive challenge. So I came to work for Bernina as a webmaster because I sewed, and actually I had submitted a project to them, and there was embroidery. And that was in 96. I had never touched embroidery in my life. And back then it was like Peter Rabbit. You put on a t-shirt and a sweatshirt. You know, it's great for a big slice of the market is grandmothers do this for their grandchildren. And it's awesome for that. You know, it's not my thing. I'm more abstract than that. Artistically, I'm very abstract. So, and geometric. I love geometry. Actually, one story I told when I won the award for this quilt. When I was 9 years old, I wanted a spirograph, you know, the geometric spinning tool. And my sister asked for the same thing. Well, there were six kids. My folks wouldn't buy the same toy for two. So, expedient deleted her. She got the spirograph. So now I go for about $10,000 worth of equipment. I have a spirograph, and I'm making quilts with it. Literally, that's what it is. Because that is the reason I wanted that spirograph. I was attracted to those repetitive. And the piece I did for Japan for this year, the last sentence of the description was complexity out of simplicity. And actually, I like simplicity. I believe in life that every year I hope to peel a layer off. So that when I'm old, you know, when my teeth are falling out, I will have reached a level of simplicity where it won't bother me anymore. You know? But out of a deceptively simple concept, if you assemble it and, you know, kind of create a kaleidoscope with it, you can look at it a thousand different ways and you will see a thousand different pictures. So I like that. I've always liked simple concepts that are kind of assembled in 3D. And even though this is a 2D medium, I've tried to achieve a 3D result. And with the layering of the thread, it's possible. It would not be as easy with layering fabric or with just flat prints. But with the layering of the thread, actually you can. So it's been a fun exercise. So I came from the embroidery world, teaching embroidery design software. And then, the software evolved version 1, version 2, 3, 4. And as of version 4, they introduced a quilter program in it. So we had a training and at the office before we go and train our the shop owners. So I'm in the training, and of course, I knew how to use the software. I was teaching on it. So I used to train, teach, word processing, spreadsheets, internet, email, you name it, for a living. So I look at the menus, yeah, okay. So I was fooling around. And I tell people, play is the essence. I tell my students still today in software, when I teach a software class, as I taught a software class 2 nights ago, play with it. You may not make anything, but you will learn 1, 2, 3 techniques that on your next project, your light bulb will go on and say, I know how to do this. Yet you just, quote unquote, wasted an hour or spent an hour fooling around with it. That's fine. That's how you learn how to use the tool. And then when the day you actually need the tool, you'll know it. So I came through that route, the embroidery. But my slow cooker was, you know, in the background, this is not what I want to do. This is not what I want to do. You know, what if? And then one day, when I did those doodles, I had enough building blocks that the spark hit. Like, you know, so the hay was dry, the spark hit, and then it happened. So it went in about a month. I made the first quilt, and that was kind of the demonstration piece. The technique was actually, the thread technique was different. It was heavier, which worked for that design, but I wanted more translucence between the layers of color. So I thinned down the stitch tracks. It's a straight stitch that goes out in an arc, and it comes right back on itself. So it's actually two stitches, where the first one was a triple straight stitch, which is much denser. Mm-hmm. So the top color would obfuscate or cover up the bottom colors more. It made for the spinning, but it did not allow the colors to come through as much. So my technique has evolved. When I complete this series, the next quilt, it's a personal quilt. My best friend, my soul sister, died of breast cancer 8 years ago. And I miss her more every year. So I have a photo of her, and I'm going to digitize about a 1-inch size thread dots, and we'll render the picture with just the thread dots. But each one will be on a separate piece. And I'm going to do a quilt as you go. So the dots will be raised above the background. So she will raise out of the quilt. One memory, like fragmented memories, one dot at a time. And it's just only by stepping back that you'll be able to see the whole her. No. And her name was Chantal. So that one, and for the back of the labels, actually, if I show you the labels, I tell people, I have more fun with the labels. And if I will be remembered for anything, it's for my labels. The label is a distillation of the design. So in this case, you can see that it echoes the shapes you see on the front. And I use a salient color of the quilt, of the dominating color, to actually do the writing on it. So and these are panels that are pieced together. So the labels are fun because it's really when after doing the quilt, or sometimes before I stitch it out, after designing the quilt, I let everything decant, and what's left at the bottom is the label. That's, you know, I try to grab the key elements of the quilt. So for her, what I will do is everybody I know who knew her, I will have them send memory blocks, you know, memory pieces of fabric, and assemble the frame in the back to make the label. So it will be, you know, that's a personal quilt. So, and then there's 20-some more on paper as it is. So it's funny because I was told I had the bug when I walk into the, you know, I go to the bathroom, to the kitchen at work to get a glass of water and come back to my desk, two more ideas. We have a whiteboard. My two assistants quilt, both of them. And I'll describe what I want to do, and they look at me like, yeah, you need a sabbatical. I would love a sabbatical. So it's once you start playing, and again, the word is play. If this is, I can't afford to do this for a living. I need my full-time, you know, my daytime job. This being the U.S., we need the job with benefits. So, and that's fine. I love my job. I love what I do. It's very technological, and it's exposed me to all this. This is technology. But to me, technology for its own sake means nothing. To me, it's a design tool, and the quilter software, for instance, is my final one. I can change the color background on it, so I can actually create with the fabric the color I want, and then I can literally design right off of there. And by the time I see the quilt, what I do is when I see the quilt on the computer, and people think the computer is this abstract thing, but I tell my students, pick one thing you like to do with a computer. You know, a lot of my students are in their 50s, 60s, sometimes 70s, and they'll say, I hate the computer, or, you know, I wasn't born with a computer, and it's easier for you younger people, and all. Just find one thing you like to do with it, whether it's emailing with your grandchildren, or your children, or, you know, a pen pal, anything. Find one thing you like to do, and you'll work through the kinks of the keyboard, and the this, and the that, and by the time you're done with that, you can now open up to other things you like to do with it. So I say, if you like to do embroidery, that's the perfect way to learn how to use your computer. Keep it simple, and then play with it. So I will. My goal is actually to show that the technology is just—it's a tool. The electrical sewing machine is a tool, and you know there's been in the quilting world, I've become aware that, you know, the debate between machine-made quilts and handmade quilts and so on over the years, and how we're evolving. People have to remember that the number one sold model of sewing machine between about 1948 and 55 was the electric motor. Just a single motor, not a machine. People were retrofitting motors on all the treadles. And that was the number one sewing machine model sold. There was a motor. So, and you know, I've had, like, art quilting is more accepted now.
There is a segment of the quilting public who doesn't necessarily appreciate or is not interested or doesn't value art quilting. But the way I look at it is the first day, and I'm pretty sure it was a mother, who went and actually bought fabric from the store in town or from the catalog instead of using scraps from shirts and garments to make quilts for the bed. The first time a mother actually scrounged and scraped to save money to buy fabric to make a special quilt, all color coordinated, whatever the design was, for the wedding bed for her daughter. That art quilt was born. Mm-hmm. Because that quilt was not going to be used every night. People would keep it. It was special, and it was made to a bed size, where today they make for wall in most cases. But art quilt was born. But there is that connection still to keeping your children warm and making something beautiful for them, and so on. So actually, my first, I had forgotten my, I don't consider it a quilt, but my first quilted project that was an art project was an American flag that I did. I digitized the stars for embroidery, and I stitched them up on a navy wool. And I call them federal colors, colonial colors, a dark navy wool. And then I used a tea dye colored flannel, but it has little stripes in it, vertical stripes. And for the 13 stripes, and then the red stripes have a little black fleck in them. From a distance, you don't see any of that. It just looked like the white has yellowed. And the little stripes create a rippling visual effect. And I used a feather stitch to assemble everything together. And I gave that to a colleague of mine who's Swiss, because he got his citizenship right after I got mine. Because when I became eligible for citizenship in 1998, I applied because I wanted to be able to vote. And I'd been in the U.S. already for over a decade.
Well, we should say you're Canadian.
I'm Canadian by birth, yes. I'm French-Canadian. But I've been a citizen since 2000, so I'm a Pan-American now. And when my friend Heinz, I told him, well, you can't vote. That's no good. You're eligible now. You should get your citizenship. She says, you're right. So he did it. So after his induction ceremony, the first Monday after that, when he came to work, I presented him with his first American flag. And his wife, who was American, she was tickled too, because it meant a lot. I mean, yeah, you become full participant in society. Before that, I was a walking case of constitutional violation. I had taxation without representation. So that was the first, actually, first time I designed a quilt. The design was dictated by the flag, the shape of the flag. But I combined embroidery and the quilting and put that away. And 5 years later, I made my first art quilt. So I'm a very slow cooker that way. And those ideas will go in the background, and one day, whoops, the wave will come back and something will be born out of it. So it's been a lot of fun because it's creative play. That's all it is. Really, lucky for me, when it comes to the awards, you never know when people will recognize your work or not. And I would say, don't do it for that. Do it just to see your idea out. Usually, when you have an idea like that, people will want to see it because people are interested in ideas. Especially quilters are very generous of their time, of finding out, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? Garment sewers are like that too. People who sew like to share stitches, and there's a thread, there's a common thread running through. And it's great. I mean, in Houston there was a joke. The security guard told me, he gave me two thumbs up. He says, good crowd control. I told him I needed the electric slide song on a CD with a boombox, because for people to see the quilt, I would have them step back about 10 feet and then go sideways. And it looked like a group of people learning to do the electric slide.
Oh, I love it.
And we had a lot of fun. People said, this is the exercise portion of the program. it's fun. I mean, I like to, I will explain my technique and all that, no problem, anybody who asks me. But then it's okay, what are you making? I want to find out what you're making. And it's unbelievable. You walk a quilt show, and in Chicago, we're lucky now that the IQF show comes to Chicago in Rosemont. And just to walk the aisles and see, if you ask 700 people, what is your idea of quilting? You're getting a different, completely different idea. And it's all, you could spend hours on each one. So I take my son to the show to see it.
What does your son think of your quilt making and quilting in general?
Actually, when he saw the first one, this one last year, he was going 12. And it's the age where boys, you know, nothing's cool anymore. And he used the word, it's cool. So that, this is my harshest judge, I might say. And that actually, in many ways, that was my best validation for the work. You know, he thought it was cool. I mean, and also for him, he's forming an artistic mind. So it was cool. He has done some sewing projects. I'm not sure if she will stick with it. But he has tried. And when I teach at the local store, if he's with me that week, he will come with me. They'll put him to work. They haven't changed light bulbs. They put him to work. And actually, he likes doing that. You know, he feels a sense of value. Kids love participating in a grown-up project. And they do at the local store. That's another thing to look. I would encourage people to look for. Most quilt shops now have a quilt for charity or community causes. At the local store in Naperville here, they make quilts for children at Edwards Hospital or Central DuPage, and children may have, you know, put certain warrants usually so that they can bring enough quilts so that it makes a difference. And there's a lady who's Sandy. She's one dynamo of a lady. Sandy is retired. She gets there. She cuts all the fabric, prepares it all, people piece blocks. And so last time I was there, they sat my son down, and for about an hour and a half, he pieced blocks together. And I've noticed that he was applying himself, and he was being more methodical and careful, and he got good. You know, a good machine makes for good results, but still, he was. So the work ethic, the quality of what I call quality of work ethic, because to me, work ethic really comes to quality. You want to do it right. And I could see where if I tell him about it, it's deadly lecturing. But if he just sits down there and they show him how, he feels like he has to do it right. And he wants to do it right. And I say, oh, it's working. It's happening. So that's, and actually through both my parents, both being craftspeople, we learn how to work and do it right. I have seen my father put his big hands, you know, who handled work and nails and cement and, you know, all week long, he would pass his hand on the table after he sanded it, and he could find if there was a micron that needed to be sanded, and he would go back and redo it at every level. And I learned that early on. And actually, not long ago, I had to do a railing for my house. I bought it unfinished, just raw wood, and I sanded it, I cut it, sanded it, stained it, and I was able to go back. My father passed away over 20 years ago, and I believe in genetic memory. I was going way, way back, seeing him work, and I found out that I knew how to do it, even though I had never done a railing, never had to do stain work like that. I'd done stain work, I'd done varnish, but never like that. And you learn from people you have a chance to work with. So what I would like to do next is find somebody who's been quilting for a long time and spend some time with them to learn. Because like piecing, I keep my piecing simple. It's not really where my zen is so far, but I'm getting a little more into it every time because I'm taking my time now. Mm-hmm. Slow down. Mm-hmm. It come natural early on, but it's a little easier now. So I hope to be able to sit down with people and learn how to do it. I might even want to learn how to do hand piecing at one point, because hand piecing you can do anywhere. And mostly for small pieces you can give away. Actually, I don't consider quilting, but when I was married, one of the first projects, the first year my ex-wife and I were together, we made potholders for the clan, for the tribe. We both come from big families, six children each. So, big tribe. Some people are still using those potholders, you know, and we were using leftover fabric. We even bought some fabric at one point to make fancy ones, because potholders you use crafts. Towels, you know, I mean, we use corduroy that was meant to cover a couch as a slip cover. Best corduroy makes the best potholder fabric. So anyway, some of my relatives and hers still use their potholders. They've been very careful with them. So that, you know, you make something for people. It's an everyday, I mean, potholder. You know, it's going to get burned someday. It's going to get ketchup thrown on it, something. People still attach value to it. There's something to making. So I learned from both my parents. The last year my father lived, that year at Christmas, all the presents for every six of us, that my mother had made something by hand, one or two pieces each, and my father had made things by hand. So we, you know, this is not just an example. You know, I consider myself the son of my father and my mother, and when I make things by hand, it's not like, oh, I have to live up to the standard they set. No, no, no. It's I want to do this. It's part of me. It's part of who I grew up with. When I formed the image of myself growing up, making things and making things for other people was important. So this, you know, this, these art pieces is for my own enjoyment, the visual enjoyment, and hopefully other people will enjoy them as well. But in a way, I get more satisfaction when I pull, I trim the last stitch off that old blues quilt for my son, or when we do a pillow cover for his bedroom, or 2 years ago I bought a beautiful batik of dragons. It's called a Chinese lung, you know, a beautiful plastic dragon. Beautiful work. The lady who does it, I can't remember which state she's in, but if I meet her again at the quilt show, I'm going to look for more pieces. So I wanted to make a wall quilt for my son out of it. Very simple. I used a stitch regulator and, you know, just outlined it as much as I could. And then I spun a border around it based on the colors in the batik, but just strips swirling around the border, and put that on the wall. And I made a cornice with a kit and put some red and black shantung silk on it, and we dangled Chinese lanterns and put Chinese danglers at both ends. He likes it. And I repainted his room while he was away Christmas with his mother and her folks. And he came back and, you know, he said, whoa. Well, he's used to it now. I'm a 13-year-old. The funny thing is that whenever he brings a new friend home, they see his room and I hear, whoa. So I know it's a new friend in his room when I hear the whoa. And for me, it was not about getting whoas. It was about wowing him. Mm-hmm. I wanted his room to be special, what parent doesn't want to. But he's also learned, you know, how to balance, and, you know, he's actually, because he helped actually in conceiving of the design. So, okay. I hope I'm planting seeds with him, and then, you know, we'll see for the rest. And whenever he's made something, he refuses to use my older machines, which I would give him one to use, but they're like the mechanical old-fashioned sewing machines. I have a collection of machines. Nah, touchscreen. So I can't blame it. I like it too. So it's not about technology, although the technology is so good now that what I see on my computer screen is exactly what you see on the table today. And so you can now formulate an idea and validate it on screen and go with it on fabric. The 90% of the time is spent with a needle going through fabric and you're humming of that motor and then piecing it and, you know, pressing and all that stuff. So that is still quilting. But you cannot conceive of it and literally do it on screen and then, you know, execute it on fabric afterwards. So that I hope is something I can, you know, just show as an example, and hopefully more people will play with that.
Describe your studio.
Oh, my master bedroom is my sewing studio because it's only a room big enough to hold my, you know, two embroidery machines, my regular sewing machine, my overlockers, my cutting table, and then the little computer desk. Luckily now sewing machines can take a USB stick, so whenever I do my design work, I don't even bother hooking up the cable, which I have. I just put it on the stick and stick that on the machine. It's north-faced. It has three windows. My house is a cheap cardboard, modern construction, suburban house, you know, with plastic siding. But it has, the first time I walked in, it had windows. And my basement would give me a bigger sewing room, but I slept in a basement for 11 years as a kid. And I'm sorry, but we also stored potatoes in the unfinished portion. And I think I'd rather have the potatoes in the basement. I do not like being in a basement. That's me personally. So north face is ideal because I don't get direct sun on the fabric machines and so on. It gets hot in the summer because it's under the roof. So this last summer, I have AC, but to chill that room, I would have to freeze the house. So this last summer, I got a window air conditioner. High efficiency, you know, quiet. And actually, one of my quilts, the workmanship suffered a little bit because it was 85, 90 degrees in that room at 9 in the morning, and I had to work there all day. So I realized, you know, the air conditioner cost me $100. And it's very high efficiency, so it doesn't cost much. I close the door, only refrigerate that room, but it actually impacted. Otherwise, I'm Canadian. I don't like air conditioning. I like the breeze. But yeah, it's just my master bedroom. And I wish it was bigger. One day I want a sewing room that I have to wear rollerblades to go between the stations.
That'd be fun.
My bedroom could be a ship's cabin, you know, a bunk, because that's fine with me. I'm an early riser, and the minute I'm out of bed, I'm out of my bedroom. So it could be the smallest room possible. My studio, I would like to have space in between. Because that space is where your mind is able to unfocused from the material around you, and it's processing in the background. I tell people ask me sometimes, you're both left and right brain, are you? I said, oh yeah, and you should see the spikes in the middle. And it's one of those where, you know, when you stop looking at something you're tracking, your brain is free, even if it was for a few seconds, to assemble something. I'm very visual, so my brain goes through a lot of images, and I would like to have a little more open space. So luckily, I have the windows right there. When I piece, I open the windows, and the breeze is coming right over me. I will have that sensation as a place. It's not just the quilting, it's not just the breeze, it's not just the natural light, it's all of that together, the being in the space, and, you know, the atmosphere, the ambiance, and which is very functional, but with the breeze and the light and the project and making something, there's a unique experience there that I can only get there, and I love it. I can sew for half an hour there, and I come out of there, and there's no worries in the world. You know, I'm at peace. In more ways than one. Yes.
Very good. Well, believe it or not, we've talked for 45 minutes. Is there anything you want to add? I always give people that chance.
I would say if somebody, and it doesn't necessarily have to be with quilting, it has to do with, you know, cooking, anything, making things. There is nothing more worth the time in the world than to stop, you know, cancel an evening, you know, where you were planning to what, let TiVo record the program and make it, sketch it, make it, make something. There's a zen in making that we don't get anywhere. Not just because it's active, it engages all the senses. It engages the whole self, the whole body. The self is primarily the body. I mean, we're physical beings. And when we are engaged physically in something like this, and, you know, we're usually making something beautiful out of it, be it very simple, a coaster or a wall-sized quilt. The scale really is just a matter of degrees. But making something, there is a zen in there. And it's, you know, there's a quality, there's a state of being we reach there that we cannot purchase, we cannot visit, we cannot acquire, it cannot be given to us. We have to make it. So the free time does not exist in this day and age. We have to make it. I would like to print my calendar on stretchable material.
Okay.
To open up more time, but making something. When I'm old, if there's one nugget of wisdom I could pass on to, you know, my son or my grandchildren, it would be that. Make something. As simple as it is, fold a piece of paper, make a paper airplane, make something. The rest, it's just a matter of scale and degree. But yeah, make something, and then, you know, you can make it with somebody else. You can give it to somebody. There's a whole bunch of ramifications from there. But yeah, making something is where I get the most enjoyment in life.
Well, thank you so much for taking your time to do this interview with me. And it is now 10:32.